This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Extra Point with knowledgeable analysts and exclusive special guests. It's your look at the world of sports through the eyes of Place to Be Nation. And now your hosts, Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, George Ribellino.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back.
Might have forgot about it.
Nah, no one ever forgets us. Welcome back to your home for everything sports, Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo. It has been an interesting summer. We haven't been on in, God, a month and a half. I hope everyone enjoyed their July. Anybody who went on vacation, as did I. And we are in August, which means we begin the best 2 months of the year if you're a baseball fan. Because from now till the first weekend of October, it is war. And even divisions that look like they're going to run away may not run away. And other divisions are tightening up very tightly. Of course, the trade deadline passed, and we'll talk about that tonight. But I can't talk about anything without my compadre, who can't buy any new T-shirts because he didn't get anybody new. Although I don't really think I could see him walking around with a Dustin Ackley T-shirt. The doctor! Dr. G. George Ribellino.
Wow, the sarcasm's back. That swagger, the Mets swagger is back from the beginning of the season.
Where's your Dustin Ackley T-shirt?
Yeah, Dustin Ackley T-shirt. You know, first of all, I was wondering, should we change the name of the show during the summertime, call it like Extra Innings or Grand Slam?
No, because then Yes would sue us.
Or something like
that.
And then
you probably just, you'd turn heel on me and testify against me anyway and put me in jail.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you'd sell out. And if your paycheck had pinstripes on it, you'd sell me up the river in a heartbeat.
Oh, definitely.
So, you know, so.
But, no, I tell you the truth, the last time we did an episode, and I guess it was back in June, and things have changed. I tell you,
immensely
compared to that time. So, for all our teams, and it's been a fun baseball season. I think
it has been.
It has you know, the parity is definitely in place, and you did see some teams selling, at the trade deadline, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of teams in it.
Yeah,
a lot of teams are going for it, or even some teams, deciding to, make a trade, not necessarily for this year, mm-hmm. for future years. So, definitely interesting trade deadline. Yeah, it's very weird to say as a Yankee fan, it's 2 years in a row now, really nothing major has happened.
Right.
So, I'm excited. The baseball season is in full swing, and now we're hitting towards the second half and. I can't be any happier, and I'm sure you're probably even more excited than I am.
Well, it is nice to finally actually care about a trade deadline. Usually, I'm selling like Sanford and Son, but
you can't complain now. I know that the Mets had kind of a bad week last week up until the trade deadline.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. I got an opinion.
But I will say this: you really can't complain too much about the management
nope.
right now.
They absolutely not.
They definitely put their cards on the table and said, let's do this.
Nope.
We're all in.
You are absolutely correct. And this is pretty much going to be all baseball on this episode. No one cares about
it. Who the hell wants to talk about the
No one cares about Tom Brady. Nobody gives a crap anymore. It's over. He's not playing until it'd be NFL week 6. I think they're his first
the
game back.
Jets fans have a shot. At least in the beginning of the season, so
I don't hope. Yeah, the Pats fans would be. Let's see, they miss at Pittsburgh, home to Pittsburgh, which is that first game of the season, and I think they play the Bills, the Jaguars, and actually the Cowboys.
And you know what? Didn't we just say we weren't going to talk about this?
And then Brady comes back. Well, that's really all I wanted to say was that we're going to beat the Patriots in week 5. Grappolino, Grappolino, Garoppolo. Genie Garoppolo is quarterbacking the Patriots.
The Mets get Cespedes, and you're just like, oh.
And the Bruins are going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm going to have 5 championships this. No, I'm not. but anyway, no, we're not talking about NFL. Camp's open. We'll talk more about it in the coming weeks. It's baseball time. There's really nothing else to talk about. Oh, Rhonda. Ronda dominated again. God, she's a hot bitch. She kicked the crap out of Correa last night. 34 seconds.
I saw
that.
I saw it on Facebook. Somebody had like a YouTube clip of it. I was like, holy shit, that woman is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, she just she did a hip toss and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, boom. And it was done. Punched it.
Yeah, and then she usually doesn't win like that. Usually she snaps off the chick's arm, but this time she just pummeled the crap out of her. So,
which is funny because the person she was fighting was a puncher. So
yeah. She's going to fight that cyborg chick, and I think she's going to kick the crap out of her.
And I'm not going to sit here to pretend to know I know UFC because I don't. I'm just going by what I'm saying.
Well, you know what? Rhonda's the kind of girl that's going, or athlete that's going to bring people like you to the fore. People that don't watch UFC all the time. Then Dana White, he's a buffoon. He says that wrestling, WWE or wrestling is fake. Why don't you just shut up and deal with your own league? You know, leave everybody else alone. Because then all the dopes come out.
He wants to fight Vince.
Vince had kicked the crap out of him at 70-something years old. So, whatever. Anyway, let's not talk about that. Baseball, baby. Pennant races, trades, juice, everything. And we can't do that without bringing in, of course, first time I've talked to this guy since the last time we did a show. He is our MLB analyst. He is a newspaper writer. He's ducking the raindrops, ducking thunder. He's not ducking Thor, because Thor right now is dominating at Citi Field. Welcome back, Joel Barnhart.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We are awesome. Well, I'm awesome. He's mediocre.
Fair enough. I'm nonplussed.
All right.
Let me. Before we start, I should put my 2 cents in on the Tom Brady Ronda Rousey thing.
Yeah.
I don't care. Let's talk baseball.
Yeah,
all right. That's what I like about Joel. He doesn't mix words, just gets it
Ronda,
over with.
Ronda would kick all our asses. We'll just say that right
now. Pretty much.
All right, anyway. All right,
Before we start, Scott, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, even though this is not a wrestling show.
Oh, that's right. I meant to do that. You were talking about baseball.
We mentioned about the passing of Roddy Piper.
Hot Rod, baby. Man, do you know anything about building up drama? You're like, let's talk about Roddy Piper. Let's talk about Piper. Come on, man. Drama. I was going to be like, I was going to play the bagpipes and everything. And no, you're like, let's talk about Piper because I want to talk about Dustin Ackley. I just sounded like Mad Dog Russo just now. Mikey, we're going to talk about Dustin Ackley, Mikey.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
You don't do as good a Francesa as Justin, though. he's a pretty good Francesa.
You know, dog.
Hey, dog. Yep, Friday afternoon. It's weird. I was a wave of emotions on Friday because you know, I just found out about the Mets getting Cespedes, and I was on cloud nine. And then, like an hour later, our good friend Double A Armento sends me a message going, "Look at TMZ." I'm like, "Okay," and I go on TMZ, and there it is: the Hot Rod, Rowdy Piper, passes away at the age of 61 to cardiac arrest. He had been battling cancer for a long time too. It sucks. It's been a shitty year for wrestling in that aspect.
With Dusty Rhodes a few weeks ago.
And now Hot Rod, meet your boy Buddy Landell. Three wrestlers. There's your trinity. Three wrestlers in the span of like 7 weeks.
Tommy Rogers, too.
And Tommy Rogers. So two baby faces and two pretty good heels. I think it's safe to say Roddy Piper is probably one of the three greatest heels in the history of this entire business. I have a favorite match and a favorite moment, and then I'll go around the horn. And I know that there's going to be a couple of podcasts coming out in the next few days, very Piper-centric here on PlaceBeNation.com. First off, my favorite match, Piper match of all time, will always be him and Greg the Hammer Valentine at Starrcade 83, the dog collar match. The match is – you and I watched it the night, Dr. J. The match is so goddamn violent. I love it.
I love it.
He's punching his ear. Old school NWA, Barnhart, you know it.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, that's my favorite, too.
I also like him and Brett at WrestleMania 8. That's also a fantastic match. Because that match showcased that Brett, that Piper could actually wrestle. He was actually
I enjoyed the Hollywood back...
Oh, the Backlot Brawl from WrestleMania 12?
Oh, yeah. I kind of enjoyed that. I mean, it's not my favorite, but I did enjoy that. You know, that was more towards later in his career, obviously, but...
Yeah.
But I have to go with the Greg Valentine match as well. Is my favorite.
My favorite Piper moment. I mean, a lot of people like the WrestleMania 6 promo where he's half blackface. don't know if that would go over well now, but it's probably still one of the most epic, in terms of bizarro world, Piper promos ever. But I think my favorite Piper moment's got to be the War to Settle the Score, February 18th, 1985, the lead-up show to WrestleMania 1. When you could piss off enough people to have to bring the cops around the ring, you've done your job. You've done your job. To get an entire building, 20,000 people riled up, and get that moron Mr. T riled up, and Hogan and everybody, to get the cops around the ring, that's, to me, that you can't do any better than that. That is how to be a heel. And there's some people today that need to get that way. You know, if they really want to make it in this business as a heel, you got to look at
it. Yeah, I love that. I also love the Jimmy Snuka Piper.
Well, coconut to the head, of course.
Well, because that was just like, you know, when I was watching wrestling and I was, you know, obviously really young at that time, you know, you're like, what the hell's going on here? You know, like, it's just like, you know, and you get caught up in the drama of that, you know, especially, you know, at that time as a kid, you're more root for the baby faces. So you didn't know what the heck was going on. So I'll always remember that. And I don't know, Scott, if you remember, but also the build up to the Greg Valentine, Roddy Piper, thought collar match, some of the interviews he did was way out there. I mean, he was just crazy. And he always did that funny laugh, like that, you know, he was just crazy. But, and you didn't know, like, if you were young, you're like, is he a heel or is he a face, you know, like, in this match. So those are my memories of him.
I mean, it's one of the greatest heels of all time. Joel, any thoughts on the Hot Rod?
You know, I got into wrestling a lot later, partly because I'm younger, but also just I kind of missed the boat on the 80s stuff. I just didn't get into it until, you know, 92 WCW. But so my first actual exposure to Piper was probably his WCW run with Hogan. And, of course, that was, you know, that was not good. It was mostly just, you know, two old guys trying to, you know, rehash something from 12 years ago, and it didn't work very well. So my first memories of Piper are not, you know, the peak, but you know, of course, that, you know, kind of once I got, you know, online and everything, I remembered watching him, and I wanted to see, okay, what was the big deal here? What was the, you know, what was the draw back in 96, 97? Why did they make a big deal out of it? Mm-hmm. And so I went back, you know, and I would watch, you know, his 80s WWF stuff. And then, you know, and I started to kind of get it. And I started to see that, you know, he was never a great wrestler. And I've always kind of disliked him a little bit for that. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's just me personally, just liking wrestlers over, you know, the Three Stooges offense that he would do, you know,
right.
But he always had energy and he always had a charisma to him, where you just had to watch him. I mean, even if you're sitting there wondering why is he just throwing punch drunk lefts and poking people's eye, you're still watching him going, you know, this is not a 5-star classic, but I'm still entertained by
it. Yep, I agree. Yep.
My first memory of Roddy Piper that really stands out as being something good is the 92 Royal Rumble when Flair is in the ring by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Heenan is just like, he did it. He emptied the ring. He's the champ. And then Piper's music hits.
Yeah.
And Flair's face. And Piper just beats the dog mess out of Flair for like 2 minutes till Jake comes in. It was just tremendous. And like, I mean, I'm not a big crowd guy. I can watch wrestling on mute and be okay with it.
Right.
But the crowd goes nuts and it really was great. And, you know, and then I got into his Portland stuff about a year or two ago. I picked up some stuff from there and that's just as good. Maybe even better because he's not trying to be Roddy Piper, the cartoon heel. He's just trying to be Roddy Piper the asshole.
Yep. You know, which he was very good at.
he was, you know, which by all accounts is, you know, he didn't seem like he was a jerk in real life. I mean,
he wasn't. You know. I mean, if you hear a lot of people say he actually was a really nice guy, my father's friend was a wrestler down in Florida, and I remember actually talking, you know, we were good friends with him, and his wife was saying, yeah, she goes, you know, I actually one time flew on a flight, and Roddy Piper happened to be sitting next to her. I don't know why she was going separate or whatever, and she said he's actually almost shy. She's like, I was surprised because I'm expecting this bombastic guy, and he's friendly, but just very, very reserved. But, you know, if you watch in the Legends House, you kind of get an idea of his personality a little
bit. Yes, yeah.
You know, that he actually...
Yeah, that's weird to watch now.
But he's very guarded. He's a very guarded person.
Yeah, I could... I mean, I never watched a minute of Legends House because I don't want to hear Jim Duggan and Gene Okerlund and Jimmy Hart talk about whatever the fuck they would talk about on that show.
Yeah.
But
I thought it was funny, but I wasn't a big fan of those guys either.
when I see Roddy Piper, you know, in his, you know, quieter moments, when the handful that I've seen where he's kind of, you know, turning the character off, he does. He really seems like, yeah, he was probably kind of a, you know, overall kind of quiet, shy guy. But then, you know, I think maybe the character was just an outlet for him. It was just a switch he could flip and just get all that stuff out. So, you know.
You know what he reminds me of, Joel? He reminds me of like a comic. You notice, you never notice, like most comics, they have like, they have that weird personality where, you know, they're on the stage and they'll make everybody laugh, but they're very, in real life, you know, when they're not on stage, they're introverted or guarded. Look at Robin Williams, for instance. Robin Williams kind of reminds me a little bit of Roddy Piper, that kind of eccentric personality.
Yeah, well, I can tell you firsthand, George. I know exactly what you're talking about, because when I'm teaching, I have a different personality than when I'm not. And I've been asked. I have had multiple students ask me if I do any acting or stand up comedy, not because I'm good at that sort of thing. I don't know if I would be or not, but because they can see that it's a switch. You know, I get up there and I almost treat it like wrestling in a sense. I almost treat it like I have to be a different character. I have to, you know, I mean, instead of getting them to watch me beat somebody up or whatever, I have to teach them, you know, this objective, and I'll do anything I need to do to teach them that objective. You know, it doesn't matter. And
that's interesting.
You know, so I can definitely see that where you know, you're a performer 1 minute, and then when you turn it off, you're a totally different person.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, because we got used to the way, like, in the Attitude Era, where, like, these characters, like a Stone Cold or even Mick Foley, kind of brought their real personalities into their characters. Mm-hmm. Whereas Roddy Piper, it seems like he was a guy that was quiet, introverted, a little guarded, but then his personality and his character kind of is different than how he is in real life.
Yeah, I get the sense a lot of the 80s guys are like that. I feel like Flair's like that too. But with him, he's been doing it for so long that I feel like those lines have blurred. And he's lost somewhere along the way. It just, you know, and again, I know we're playing armchair shrink here. I feel like Flair forgot how to turn it off.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think
Piper ever did.
He got so caught up in the hype of his character, he really just he just lived his life as his character.
Probably why he got married 4 times.
Oh, absolutely. You know it. But, and you know, there's other guys like that too. I mean, we could go on and on about that for sure.
Well, rest in peace, Hot Rod.
It definitely was a shock about Roddy Piper, and the wrestling world loses another another legend. But you know, the thing is that
it gives a chance, hopefully, you know, now with the network and everything, that, you know, a newer generation could learn about what we've always, you know, like you were saying, you wanted to find out what was the rave of this guy in the 80s. And then now you could go back and watch all this footage much easier than you could years ago and get an idea of what we're talking about. And then you're like, wow, sometimes you wish, oh, I wish some of these characters were like that today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really a shame that we have to do that. I mean, we do that with a lot of sports, but, you know, it's a shame that someone has to die to really, for a generation to go and say, what was so special about him? You know, and Piper's like that, and, you know, and there's going to be more. I mean, I hate to say it, but there's going to be, you know, as time marches on, there's going to be more guys where, you know, there's going to be a whole generation that say, what the hell was so special about that guy? And then they're going to go back, and the magic is that they'll be able to find it out. You know, they'll be able to say, I get it now. I see why, you know, Ric Flair was the greatest of all time. Because there's a generation of kids who have no clue who Ric Flair
right,
was.
Right, or saw him at the end there where, you know, he's kind of flabby and, you know, old and, you know, not that same swagger. I mean,
That part of his career is almost as long as his glory years, you know, just about.
I agree. But definitely a sad end of the week last week in terms of, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, because, you know, another legend is gone.
Yep.
Downer.
Yeah. Well, we here at PlaceBeNation.com will have many tributes figure with the wonderful millions of wrestling podcasts we have here, various opinions and angles. We will honor the great Hot Rod this week. And I'm sure Monday night after Raw, I'm sure they'll have a tribute like they did for Dusty Rhodes. So, yeah. All right, let's get on to the diamond and talk about what has happened this week. Because this week it ended with the sad loss of the Hot Rod. But before that, we were firing off all these John Heyman and Rose, you know, and Rosenthal and all these guys. And paying attention to, you know, Twitter and blogs and until 4 o'clock on Friday. And then we kind of settled down and figured out who won and who lost and, you know, who held their chips and who didn't. So the standings in Major League Baseball at the moment, obviously the NL East is not yet to be decided, but we're not sure what will happen. Either the Mets and Nationals will be tied or the Nats will have a two-game lead, pending what's going on right now at Citi Field. Mets have a 5-2 lead in the sixth. In the American League, the Yankees won big today. They have a six-game lead over the Orioles and Blue Jays, two teams that did something at the deadline. The Yankees did not. In the Central, Kansas City with a comfortable eight-game lead over Minnesota. In the West, Houston with a four-game lead over the Angels, who have lost 9 of their last 10 and 6 straight. I know a lot of it's, you know, Mike Trout has been playing. He's had a bad wrist. In the National League, we talked about the Nationals and Mets. In the Central, St. Louis now 5.5 ahead of the Pirates and 9.5 ahead of the Cubs. And in the West, the Dodgers are 2.5 ahead of the Giants. If the wild card ended today, the wild card teams would be, in the American League, it would be the Angels and the Twins. So if the playoffs started today, in the American League, the Angels and Twins would play a one-game playoff in Anaheim, and the winner would play the Royals in the division series, and then the Yankees and Astros would play the other division series. And right now the Yankees have a 1 percentage point lead over Houston. So the Yankees would have the home field in that series by 1 percentage point. In the National League, the wild card teams right now, one would definitely be the Pirates. The other right now is a tie between the Cubs and the Giants. So Pittsburgh would play one of those two teams, and the winner of that game would take on the Cardinals in the division series, and then the other series would be the Nationals and Dodgers. Let's go around the horn, Joel, and we'll take a break and continue the discussion. Let's start in the American League East. The three big players, the Yankees, the Orioles, and the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, Jesus Christ. I mean, they... I mean, I think in the span of like 72 hours, they traded like 48 prospects. I mean, they gave up pretty much everybody to, I mean, they loaded up. They want the Yankees' blood. I think it's pretty clear. What were your thoughts on some of the moves they made? David Price, Troy Tulowitzki, the reliever Lowe. Blue Jays did a lot. What were your thoughts on some of their moves? Did they give up too much?
You know, I want to say they did, but, I mean, they're going to have Tulowitzki for you know, a few more years. And, you know, Price, I can't tell you where he's going to go. I have no idea. He could, you know, I mean, Detroit, Toronto, Chicago, you know, I suppose the Yankees and Mets could get in on it. Boston will probably be in on him because they're in on everybody. They're like, you know, they're like the American League slut. I don't think they gave up too much in any one trade. They've still got, you know, a couple good prospects. Dalton Pompey moves up to their number one prospect. He's a pretty good outfielder. He's seen some time with the big leagues this year. Anthony Alford is having a good year, albeit in the low minors. You know, Max Pentecost is a guy. He was a number one pick of theirs, I think it was last year. Good catching prospect. I mean, so they've still got, you know, some talent, but they definitely took advantage of, you know, the talent that they had on hand. I mean, you know, but I think they really filled every major hole they had. I mean, their biggest hole was their starting rotation, and they added Price. So, you know, it doesn't help a lot, but it kind of puts Dickey and Burley and Hutchison a little lower, you know, in terms of the pecking order, and I think that helps. They added Hawkins and Lowe for their bullpen, which, you know, their bullpen's been, you know, kind of iffy all year. Even last year, it wasn't that great. So, you know, and Ben Revere's nothing special, but he's a good defensive replacement for that outfield. He's fast, and you know, with that lineup, you know, with Batista and Encarnacion and Donaldson and Tulowitzki, you know, hitting with Revere on base. I mean, you know, he's going to score a lot of runs for them. And you know, Tulowitzki, I mean, man, the nice thing is he went to a team where he can DH a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't have that option in Colorado. And he went from arguably, well, not really arguably, the best hitter's park in the National League to what is arguably the best hitter's park in the American League. So I don't think you're going to see a huge dip in his offensive numbers. And his defense, he's better than Jose Reyes was at the position. And, you know, defense helps pitching. So, yeah, I know they gave up a lot. They really, really did. But I still think it's an overall win for the Jays. Seeing that.
I feel they're all in. And the thing is that they know the Yankees are vulnerable. I mean, you know, I'm not thinking that we're going to run away with this thing because we're not. Because you can't have these starting pitchers going 3-4 innings every night.
No, I don't care how good your bullpen is. You're right.
I think that's why the Yankees were trying to go after like a Kimbrel or Chapman, because they figured, okay, let's build the bullpen in the back there. We could probably get two innings from Betances, get an inning or two each, or maybe like Miller, put Miller back in the setup role, maybe get two innings from him and get an inning from Kimbrel to close it out. So this way you cover 4 or 5 innings and there you go. I think that's what their thinking was. But you can't survive like that. And even if you make the playoffs, you're not going to be able to go into the playoffs with a pitching rotation like this. So I think the Blue Jays said, you know what? We have a shot. The Yankees are going to be playing us a bunch more times. You know, the East is going to probably beat up on each other a little bit towards the second half of the season. Let's go all in. And, you know, I mean, from an observer, I think they did a good thing. Now, it seems like the Reds, we always wait. The Blue Jays always fly. Every year we think they build a team to win. They never seem to do it. But I'll tell you right now, they don't do it this year. There's going to be some heads on the chopping block at the end of the season.
Well, I feel like Gibbons and the GM have already, I think they've already been told either win or, you know, go pump gas. So what would they do? They pretty much fleeced the minor league system and pretty much emptied it out. And they're like, all right, well, if we don't win, then good luck with what pile of crap we left you. So I think I kind of feel like that's what their thinking is. But and the Orioles picked up Parra from Milwaukee in a deal. So they kind of strengthened their lineup a little bit. If you are the Yankees, are you a little – should you be concerned, Joel?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day, and you know, back in March, we all made our postseason our predictions. You know, and I don't remember exactly, you know, every pick we made, but I know all three of us were really high on Seattle, and they've of course stunk, and it got me thinking. The reason we were so high on Seattle is because we expected Seattle. Every roster spot, every player to a man, we expected out of Seattle what New York is doing. We expected every player to have a career year, a bounce back, be a key free agent signing. That's what we thought Seattle was going to do, and you know we were not alone in that. But that's what New York's doing. I mean, if you look at it, almost everybody they've got, with the exception of, I guess, Sabathia, is having a really amazing season. I mean, their bullpen is – I mean, Chasen Shreve has a 177 ERA. Justin Wilson's at 265. You know, the rotation is being held together with, you know, duct tape and crazy glue, but it's working – because the bullpen is so good and that offense is ridiculous. And I don't think any of us expected, you know, the offense to be as good as it is.
Well,
but
I think that's the big surprise. And you look at Teixeira having a comeback year and nobody expected anything from A-Rod, including myself.
No, I certainly didn't think I thought, you know, A-Rod might have numbers like this at the end of the season, but here he is, you know, just past the halfway mark, 96 games in, and he's got, you know, 24 homers. And but I'd still be worried because
– injuries. You
know, yeah, that rotation is – like it's shaky, and if the rotation falls down, then you're putting extra stress on that bullpen, and I don't care how good a bullpen is.
Exactly.
Guys are in the bullpen for a reason, and usually it's because they can't start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
I mean, they've used so many pitchers this year. I mean, they basically do use the shuttle, the Scranton shuttle, because, you know, like what they use a guy to help pitch 3-4 innings to, you know, help out a starter. Then you know, they can't use them for a few days. All right, so we'll send that guy down. And they love guys with options. And so that shuttle's going constantly. And I mean, it's funny because Justin would be laughing at me now because he knows I panic about everything when it comes to the Yankees. But I'm a worried Yankee fan with a 6-game lead, if that makes any sense to you, because I feel like within a week and a half that could all change.
Yeah, it certainly could. I mean, you know, I mean, Miller's already been on the DL once, and you know that's. It's worrisome, but, you know, he's generally been healthy. But, you know, Tanaka's elbow is, you know, terrifying. And
it's a time bomb right there.
Yeah. Sabathia's been awful. And, I mean, Eovaldi's getting beat up. So just imagine if, you know, if he implodes. I mean, he's got a whip of 1.49. And Pineda.
And what, 11-2, I think he is?
Yeah. Which just goes to show you how silly wins and losses are when evaluating talent. But, yeah, it's, you know, and the lineup's been great, but still, you know, I mean, as good as Teixeira and A-Rod are, you know, one tweaked hammy, one, you know, tweaked ankle, one, you know, sprained wrist, and that lineup doesn't look so good anymore.
Exactly. So I think, you know, I think as a Yankee fan, you just got to be cautious. You just got to – my key thing is just go out and win series and, you know, and let everything else, you know, take care of itself. But
again, it's going to be tough. I think they'll make some kind of deal, maybe, you know, a waiver deal. You know, maybe take something, you know, because sometimes, you know, yeah, you find little diamonds in the rough because, you know, sometimes some guys just need a change of scenery, you know, that are having rough sure. years and, you know, but that had been good in the past. I mean, look at what they did with, was it Brandon McCarthy last year? You know, he just needed a change yeah. of scenery. You
oh,
know.
Absolutely. They basically told Brandon McCarthy, your cutter's your best pitch. And he said, those idiots in Arizona told me to stop throwing it. And once the Yankees picked their jaws up off the floor, they told him, throw your damn cutter. And, yeah, he was tremendous last year.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I think sometimes you could find something like that, and I think that's what they're going to have to do because, I mean, you yeah. bring up Severino to start on Tuesday, and you know, the thing is that, you know, here you go. Now you're putting this guy out there, and if he doesn't look good after 3-4 starts, you know, his value drops. And so now you either got to try to live with him and see if he could, you know, maybe he just needs to work some things out, or – you're not going to get as much in a trade for him now as you would have, you know, last week. So,
right.
You know, it's weird. It's weird to sound like a team that I'm sitting here panicking with a 6-game lead, but you know, there's still a lot of games left.
Yeah. And you know, if history has shown us anything, I mean, leads bigger than 6 games just disappear in August and September. I mean, you know, we've seen double digit leads just vanish. You know,
exactly, so I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess you could say to a certain extent because nobody, there are a lot of places that did not pick the Yankees to even make the playoffs. So I guess you have to say they're kind of a surprise this year, which is weird with you know the payroll that they have. But you can't even judge by the payroll numbers because a lot of these contracts are so big, they were signed years ago, and you're still living with them, and you know people are more on the downside of their career, but. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised. At least I'm enjoying it. But I always feel like that the rug could be pulled from under you at any moment. You know, it's just like you said. You hold your breath every time Tanaka pitches. You know when Sabathia pitches, you're like, oh my gosh. You just hope that that he doesn't give up too many runs and the offense could come back. And you know, Nova again. You know, he's coming back from an injury. You don't know what to expect from each start and. Eovaldi, like I said, you know, he's got 102 pitches and you know, he hasn't even reached a full 5 innings yet. So, and he's 11-2. So go figure. But no, it's been an interesting and fun season so far, but there's a lot of surprise teams. I mean, and for you on the other hand, on the other end, I mean, you have to be a little surprised about what you've seen from the Tigers.
Not really, honestly. I mean, I know we were going to get to them eventually, but it's been fascinating to kind of watch the fan base. And I'm speaking for most of the people that I've talked to and most of the readers that I've, you know, seen commenting on different sites and even at my own, you know, newspaper. I think when last year ended and we had that just embarrassing – you know, exit with Baltimore. I think everybody kind of took a deep breath and most of us knew that our window was almost shut. And we just thought we probably got one more shot at this because we still got Price. We still got Cabrera. We still have Victor Martinez. And then we got Cespedes and we thought, you know, Cespedes was, he was the book that you kind of wedge in the window to keep it open, you know, but then the season started and the bullpen just kept letting us down. And we saw that Brad Ausmus was not growing as a manager. You know, we gave him a free pass for a while, but he really wasn't evolving. He wasn't changing his tactics. And you could just kind of feel this growing resentment toward the team and toward Ausmus and toward the bullpen and then it was just like everybody knew we have to do something. And everybody I talked to was just they weren't worried that the Tigers were going to buy or sell. They were worried that the Tigers were going to do nothing. And sometimes that's the worst thing you can do, mm-hmm. is just be complacent.
Right.
And so we dumped Price, and everybody was upset because Price seems like a righteous dude, a nice guy, and a hell of a pitcher. But we were like, we got a good prospect who, by the way, handcuffed the Orioles today. We got two other good left-handed prospects. Said, okay, that's pretty cool. Then we turn around and we trade Soria to the Pirates for a prospect who is a little old for his level, but you know, Jacoby Jones, he can play short, he can play center field, which tells me he's a good athlete, so he'll probably find a home somewhere, maybe a 25-homer, corner guy. And then we, move Cespedes, and we got a good pitching prospect in Fulmer, and we added, another secondary arm, and we basically, of the guys we got, I would venture to say we got six guys. Five of them are probably in the top eight of our prospect list, maybe even the top five in a row. And so people were pretty much happy that we did something. And, with Cespedes' weird contract, people were saying, well, he liked Detroit. He might come back, and this makes it easier to get him back. And, and we were sad to see the pitchers go, but what good is a closer if you can't get the ball to him? And what good's an elite starter if he's just going to walk at the end of the year and you're going to get a draft pick and you can't hold his leads for him anyway? So,
I thought you did pretty good on the Price deal because – you figure he is a free agent. You don't know if he's going to stay with Detroit. I think, they had to do something, and I think they set themselves up nicely for the future. I know people don't want to hear that, but you know what? Maybe you catch lightning in the bottle and you get a wild card spot. It's not like Detroit's, 15 games under 500 or anything, and they're totally out of it. But right. I actually think they did a good job.
I do too. I mean, I don't think we're going to catch anybody though. Call me a pessimist, but we're not. We're 4.5 out in the wild card, which doesn't sound like a lot, but there's like six teams ahead of us, and right. Plus the two leaders, so that's really eight teams ahead of you. And I've been watching them, and they're playing pretty poorly. I mean, up the from the All-Star break through the deadline, you could have put the 1915 Tigers out on the field and they would have played better. And I don't mean in 1915. I mean now. Like it was depressing. It was, we had that one game a couple weeks ago with Seattle, where Neftali Feliz got his brains beat in and gave up a grand slam to Franklin Gutierrez and turned a two-run lead into a two-run deficit. And, Brad Ausmus says, well, I got to think, what if the game goes into extra innings? I got to save Alex Wilson and Joaquin Soria just in case they tie it up. And, you're sitting there as a fan and you're going, why are you thinking about that? Why are you thinking about a hypothetical when you have a two-run lead? And that was when I personally just was like, okay, I gave up on that then. At this point, I hate saying this as a Tigers fan, just like George, was lamenting about being a Yankees fan, being worried. What I want is I want the Tigers to lose. Not because I don't like them anymore, but they need a new voice. Brad Ausmus, we've given him so much rope, and he just keeps – I want to say he's hanging himself with it, but he can't even do that right. He's not the voice that this team needs. And so I kind of want them to lose, finish under 500 – and I want Mike Ilitch, God bless him, on his deathbed to point a bony finger at Brad and say, you're fired, and then die.
and then die.
Sorry to be morbid. I don't want anyone to die. That's a disclaimer.
I've got a date with Piper.
But, oh, man. Wow.
And they say New York fans are tough.
Woo. I thought I was dark, but then Scott just turned the lights out and put a bag over everybody's head. Jeez.
I got a date with a hot rod in the dream.
But I do want that voice to – I do want that voice in the clubhouse to change, and I feel like that's the only way it's going to happen right now is either
– I think you may get your wish because I think if they don't make the playoffs, which it looks like they won't, he's going to be gone anyway.
Yeah, and Dombrowski's contract is up. I hope we keep him. He's a hell of a good GM. You know, he's done – he's probably been more important to this franchise than anybody since Sparky Anderson, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that Dombrowski sticks around, but we can tell Brad to go surf. So
move back to Connecticut. All right. I was going to talk about the Central, but we'll take a breather. And when we come back here in the Extra Point, we will continue talking post-deadline discussion with Joel Barnhart. Dive about the Royals, a team none of us had going to the playoffs. And what's going on in the AL West. Another manager I think could be on the hot seat, in my opinion. Then we'll dive into the National League as well. Extra Point, baseball. More after this.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring live audio wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile and on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, Wrestling Culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
you can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back, Police Nation. It's episode 42 of The Extra Point.
That's the Mariano Rivera.
Yes, I will give you that.
Well,
although,
shows
the Mariano Rivera / Jackie Robinson edition.
There we go. That's where my head went.
But where'd you think his head was going to go? But we'll give it to both of them. We'll give it to both of them. PoliceNation.com, of course, Dr. G, George Arbuthnot, the doctor. And, of course, Joel Barnhart. More baseball momentarily. PoliceBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Newest episode of Brainbuster. Johnny Sorrow, Matt, Danny, returning champ Kelly. Interesting show. I'll just leave it at that from what I've heard from Johnny himself. So episode 6 of Brainbuster, the pro wrestling quiz show, is up. The Comic Guys are back with their 2015 Halfie Awards. So check that out. The Place Me Network's 2015 Comics Halfie Awards. The Comic Guys are back. Check that out. Pete, Steven, and Johnny are back with special guest Dylan Hales for the This Week in Wrestling podcast for the week of August 1st. Exile on Bad Street. Memphis Wrestling, the most known unknown. I'm telling you, Dr. G, you've got to listen to the guys on Exile on Bad Street. I mean, this podcast is so right up your alley. They talk Jim Crockett Promotions. They've talked UWF Mid-South. I mean, their podcasts are like 4 hours long, but oh my God, just chock full of stuff. I mean, it's practically like a class that Joel could teach on.
I love it.
I don't think I would do half the job they do, but I will second that the Exile on Bad Street history lessons
ridiculous.
Are top shelf.
Yeah, they are.
I listen to, I listen to the UWF and the Jim Crockett ones over. I think I listened to each one over about 4 days, just breaking it up. But yeah, it's tremendous stuff.
It's bonkers.
They do their homework.
Those three podcasts, sure. the UWF Mid-South one and the two Jim Crockett's, I think totaled were like 10 hours.
Yeah, they were up there. But
yeah,
like
it's
I said,
awesome.
if you break it up, an hour a day or something like that, it's pretty easy. It goes quick. It does.
Yep. So check it out. Exile on Bad Street, newest episode, Memphis Wrestling.
Check it out because I love that stuff.
Yeah. And Memphis Wrestling, the most known unknown. Jason Greenhouse gave you your PTBN's weekend playlist. This week in 1992, the days sitting in my Plymouth Horizon listening to Blind Melon's No Rain. Dr. G misses that song. I know he does. Jordan Uckin with your newest episode of Tough Enough. I can't believe he's still watching. The show is awful this year. I don't even know why they bothered.
It is awful.
But Jordan's putting a good spin on it. So JD from the main event is giving you a spin on it, as well as his son Isaac. So check it out. Episode 6 of Tough Enough, the recap with Jordan Duncan. Also, the most recent edition of Place to Be Nation's main event from last week. I sat down with Mr. Reich, Mr. Duncan, and Mr. Willie. We talked about Hulk Hogan, the conference call, TNA history. So check that out, episode 40. Seinfeld, the PTBN series rewatch, The Marine Biologist, season 5, episode 14. So my man JR, Aaron George, Andrew Flanagan, Jordan Duncan, Jason Greenhouse. Scott Keith doing his Smark SummerSlam countdown. We go back to the very first one. August 29th, 1988, Madison Square Garden. You remember that one, Dr. G? When your favorite wrestler, the Ultimate Warrior, won the Intercontinental title. And you know, that's how I just give everybody your favorite wrestler. Your favorite wrestler, the Ultimate Warrior. Your favorite announcer, Superstar Billy Graham.
Boy, you want to get a smack in the mouth tonight, don't you?
Another great podcast to listen to. The newest episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show, Stephen Graham, Tim Livingston, and Parv, looking at the career of Rick Martel. Interesting. And not just the model, of course, but of course back in the days when he was tag team champion with Tito Santana. Not Strike Force, but back in Tito, it was Tony Garea.
I think it was
Mark Tony Garea.
Tony Garea.
Johnny Sorrow's favorite head of hair.
Yes, Tony Garea. I've lifted with Tony Garea at the same gym.
And he was an AWA.
And he was AWA heavyweight champion. Yes, he was. He beat. Do you remember who he beat, Dr. G?
Was it Mr. Saito or Mr. Saito beat him?
Very close, Jumbo Tsuruta. And then he lost to. And then he lost the title to Stan Hansen, at the Meadowlands.
Stan Hansen lost it to a pickup truck.
Yes, because Vern made him. Anyway, check out the newest edition of the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Rick Martel, the focus on that one. So there it is, placementnation.com, your home for everything pop culture. And, of course, coming up later this week, my PIC and I, Mr. Zero, we will have our next Place to Be podcast, the next Vintage Vault, as well as a little tribute to the Hot Rod ourselves. So check it out. Placementnation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Let's get back to the diamond, gentlemen. You were talking about your Tigers, Mr. Barnhart, but why don't we go up the ladder a little bit and talk about a team none of us picked to go to the playoffs. Meanwhile, they are cruising as defending American League champions, and that is the Kansas City Royals, 20 games over 500. They lead the Central right now by 8 over the Twins. And then, on top of that, they pick up probably the best starting pitcher in the free agent or in the trade group, and that's Johnny Cueto. And they pick up Ben Zobrist, who ended up hitting 2 home runs in his first game as a Royal. Man, they're all in, huh? They're serious.
They definitely are. I will stand by my remarks from a year ago that they are a fluke and this can't last forever.
Wow.
But, you know, yeah, they're really good in all seriousness. They really are. They're doing it with defense and a bullpen. They are, you know, they've got a pitching staff that I think is pretty comparable to the Yankees, you know, junk starters and a strong, strong bullpen. But, yes. You know, just take the Yankees offense and just trade it for the Royals defense. Because, you know, nobody on Kansas City is really, you know, a star hitter. I mean, Hosmer's turning into one, it sure looks like. You know, Moustakas is finally, you know, realizing some of his potential. Kane has just become, you know, an absolute monster. I mean, 24 doubles, 11 homers, 19 steals, a 372 on base average, 506 slugging, and he's, you know, gold glove type center fielder. I mean, so, you know, they still don't have that really scary, scary, you know, power threat, but they've just kind of peppered it up and down. And like I said, they, you know, with that offense and that defense, they can get by with a, you know, garbage rotation for 5 innings and then turn it over to that, you know, multi-headed monster they call a bullpen. So, you know, they are definitely not a fluke. You know, that's, you know, my opening tirade was entirely facetious, you know. But, yeah, they're doing things right. It'll be interesting to see in the coming years how they, you know, how they move forward as these players start getting more expensive. But for now, you know, if I'm a Royals fan, and I'm not, but if I was, I would just enjoy it. Because, yeah, I think they're definitely going to, you know, they have a very solid lead in the division. And unlike the Yankees, I don't think they have anyone that's going to challenge them the way Toronto is challenging New York.
Is that why you think the Twins maybe didn't do anything at the deadline? Because they probably think, you know what, we're kind of on a magic carpet. And look, I love Paul Molitor. But do you think they thought that, you know, they're kind of on a magic carpet ride and are like, you know, why break up any of this team or trade our prospects when we're probably not that good? Maybe the rest of the division's just that crappy. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think so. I mean, obviously they're not walking around saying we can be beaten, but yeah, I do think there's a sense of, you know, just being realistic and saying, you know, we probably are playing over our heads right now. We don't want to give up any of our prospects. Buxton, he's been hurt, but he still, you know, looks like he's got all the tools. And Miguel Sano, I don't like making comps when a player's this young, but he looks like a new David Ortiz. Like physically, he does, and his swing is pretty similar too. He could be a monster, and I think, you know, I think that they're still a couple years away from consistent, contention. And I think that the Maurer deal is handcuffing them from doing a whole lot of, you know, wheeling and dealing. But I think that's a good premise for why they didn't do much. I think they figure if we make it, we make it. If we don't, we're still having a great season, so let's just go with it. And, you know, I mean, that makes sense to me.
Maybe reassess in the off season and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, go from there.
Free agents are on the horizon. They have decent pitching staff, you know.
Yeah, and there's a ton of free agent talent out there for this off season. I mean, there's a lot of good pitchers that are going to be out there. And, you know, and that's probably, you know, Minnesota's biggest weakness is a pitching staff full of junk ballers. So,
right.
Yeah, I could see them doing that for sure.
Okay. Now, on the other side of the coin, what the hell is going on in Cleveland? I mean, we just were goofing about it during the break. You picked Terry Francona to win Manager of the Year. I had him going to the playoffs, so I'm not deflecting all of the guilt to you, because I thought they were going to be in the chase in this division. What the hell's going on there?
Well, their defense is bad. I mean, it's really bad. You know, their offense isn't good. Nobody can take a pitch. Nobody's hitting for power either. I mean, it's really bizarre. It's, you know, we kind of talked about how with Seattle, nobody's having a career year except Nelson Cruz. And with Cleveland, nobody's having a good season except Jason Kipnis. It's almost like some kind of reverse deal with the devil, where Satan told Jason Kipnis, okay, you can have a good season, but that means everybody on your team is going to play like you did last year. Because they're bad. I mean, you know, Yan Gomes is hitting .227. Mm-hmm. And, oh my, his on base is .254. Ugh. Yuck. I mean, you know, and you know, their middle infield, their left side of their infield, Ramirez is not hitting. Urshela's not hitting. Lindor is, you know, he's a rookie, but he's not getting on base much. And Brantley seems to have come back down to earth a bit. I mean, he's having a good year, but not the MVP sleeper last year. And it's a real shame because the pitching has been pretty good. I mean, the ERAs are inflated, but they're inflated because it's terrible defense. I mean, the staff is striking out something ridiculous. Like they're striking out 9 or 10 batters per game. But with that defense behind them, they really need to be striking out like 14 or 15. So it's just it's almost, you know, to draw another parallel, it's almost like the anti-Royals. You know, great starting rotation, but the bullpen and the offense are just in the toilet. And it might cost my prospective manager of the year his job. I mean,
wow, you think so?
It might. I mean, if I'm putting money on it, there's 3 or 4 or 5 guys I'd put in front of him, you know. but I certainly wouldn't call his job safe.
How about Robin Ventura?
You know, he's a tough call because that winning streak they just finished up was probably the worst thing that could have happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they won a few in a row. Looks like, yeah, they won eight out of 10, I think it was, just recently. And I think it just killed their ability to sell what they should have. And yeah, I remember in the off season, you know, we all said, man, they added so much. And the reality of it is they didn't add very much. They added a 35-year-old first baseman in LaRoche. They added a 30-year-old left fielder in Cabrera. They added Samardzija, who I don't know if free agency got in his head or what the deal is, but he's pitching like a fifth starter right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yanks smacked
him around today.
Yeah, I could see Ventura getting the axe. I would. If I'm making a list from least secure to most, he's definitely above Francona. He's probably the one of those four or five that would be in more jeopardy than good old Terry. That's yeah, I definitely.
Well, I think so. They were expecting more from this White Sox team this year.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
I mean,
I think
it's a garbage offense.
I think Ventura, they don't make the playoffs, which, you know, looks to be the case right now. I think he's going to be gone.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they're a little closer to the wild card than Detroit, but it's only a game.
Mm. Speaking of managers on the hot seat, let's go to our next division. And a guy that two of the three of us picked to win manager of the year in the American League. And that was
Jeff Banister?
Nope. You and me, Dr. G, picked Lloyd McClendon
to
win manager of the year in the American League, and the Mariners suck.
Yeah, you two are idiots.
Thanks, Paulie.
No problem. just wait till we get to those prospective MVP picks.
let's talk happy things, though. And that is another team that we thought would kind of fade after like April, and they haven't, and that is the Houston Astros. You know, we're not talking the, you know, Mike Scott, Glenn Davis, Astros that made me sweat 20 years ago, but I mean, you know, they got a prospective Cy Young Award candidate in Keuchel. Altuve's having a good year. I mean, their situational hitting is pretty good. They got a 4-game lead on the Angels, who, by the way, have lost 9 of 10 and 6 in a row. There was a guy that I talked about may not have a job, and that's Mike Scioscia, but they're hanging around long enough to probably, you know, make them safe for now. Two-prong question. Number one, how are the Astros still doing it? And they got Carlos Gomez. And they got who's the reliever?
They got, let's see, they got Kazmir.
Kazmir.
Yeah.
They got Carlos Gomez. They can have him.
Yeah. They got Gomez, Kazmir, and Mike Fier. So two starters and
An outfielder.
Carlos Gomez, yep.
Wow.
I love what they did. Another bullpen guy would have been nice, but that's, again, you know, the usage of a bullpen is really the new money ball. It's the key to a successful team. You see it this year with Houston. They added Neshek and Gregerson. Now, they added them thinking, hey, we've got young starting pitching. We don't know what we're going to get out of our starting pitching. If we can get 5 or 6 innings every night, then we can turn it over to, you know, a pretty decent bullpen with Neshek and Gregerson, the two new guys. And we've still got Will Harris and we, you know, they added a couple of arms and, you know, and you're seeing the same thing with the Royals. You know, they did it last year. They're doing it this year. You know, bullpens are I don't want to say they're the most important thing in the game, but they have become so critical to whether a team like the Houston Astros succeeds or a team like the Tigers just falls on their face. It's, you know, the next big thing is bullpens, and it's going to be here for a while. I mean, that's how they're doing it, is the bullpen, and Keuchel's been outstanding, and McCullers has been good. And I love the fact that they're aware that their rotation is young, so they added Fires and Kazmir to kind of add a little bit of veteran presence and a little bit more stability to that rotation. And Gomez, I mean, man, he really helps that outfield, because he's something that the rest of their guys aren't. He's not really a big strikeout guy. He gives them another contact bat with Altuve and Correa that you can kind of plug in there and say, okay, you guys get on base, and then our sluggers will hit you home. So I really like what they did. I love it.
I think this Houston team has been building for the future. I thought maybe they were another year or two away. We knew that with their prospects, they were going to be a good team eventually. But I think it even caught their management off guard at how quickly this team gelled and how successful they've been so far. And I don't think they're going anywhere.
No, I don't think so either. I think you're right though, George. I think that they're being this successful this early did kind of surprise even them. And I think that's another reason it's good that they brought in some veteran talent to kind of keep the ship steered right and say, look, you know, we're about to do something, you know, being the postseason that very few guys on this team have done. I don't know, just looking at the lineup, I'm not really sure off the top of my head how many of these Astros players have actually played in October. Not many of them.
No.
It's a fascinating team to watch. It just, it's remarkable that they're getting this done with still some pretty obvious holes. So, they'll be a lot of fun to watch the next 2 months, win or lose.
Mm. Definitely.
Now, on the other end of the road, the spectrum, let's talk about the Mariners. 10 games under 500. Too far down for them to need to make any moves. What the hell happened there? I mean,
well,
not hitting as they usually don't.
Yeah,
Cano's been not good.
No, he's been so bad. But yeah, I mean, well, it's like I said earlier with the Yankees. Everybody seems to be having the best year of their career, save for maybe CeCe and, arguably one or two others. And with Seattle, other than Nelson Cruz, it seems like everybody's just having a terrible season. I mean, Cano is – he's gone from a centerpiece to an anchor on that offense. Dustin Ackley – is an absolute bust of a draft pick a few years ago. Austin Jackson's been better than he was post-trade last year, but that's not saying much. Mike Zunino, they really needed to make a move for a catcher so they could send him down. He needs more time at AAA. All he can do is hit a home run every once in a while. There's nobody on that team that can hit outside of Cruz. The bench is pretty putrid. The rotation stinks too. Felix has been pretty good, but he's got a 3.02 ERA, and in this day and age, that's not great. That's kind of just okay.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, in the bullpen, holy shit, that's been horrifying.
Yeah, it's been horrible.
I mean, Fernando Rodney turned back into the guy he was in Detroit. Actually, he's even worse looking at the numbers. Wow. So, yeah, it's just, like I said, it's just a everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. It's just been an absolute nightmare for Seattle fans. And, you know, I don't know if there's an easy fix because, I mean, Cano is tied to such a huge contract. And Cruz, now you've got him for another 3 years after this. Maybe if James Paxton and Mike Montgomery and Taiwan Walker turn into the studs that we all thought they would, you know, maybe there's still some hope, but not this year.
I would say Packers this year.
No, not at all. This is a bad.
Yeah.
Bad ball club.
I think Cano will bounce back. He's too good of a player. He'll bounce back next year.
Yeah. I don't think this year he's got any shot because he's talking about having some kind of stomach ailment, and I can't imagine whatever it is. I just have a hard time seeing that it'll get treated successfully during a season when he's constantly traveling.
Right, a parasite. I think Jason Giambi had that.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
Back in like 2005 or something like that, 2004, 2005, something like that. 2005,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, there is always next year, but, you know, hopefully for Seattle fans, they'll have maybe a new general manager to lead the way. So I think Jack Z is just about done. I think they're kind of tired of him.
Hmm. The other team in that division, the A's, were supposed to be better, but they sold some chips to get some pieces back. They kept Reddick, but he could be a guy they trade in August. I mean, he's got a lot of money attached to him, so that's why they probably want to.
Or the off season.
Yeah. In the National League, obviously Mets and Nationals. The Mets, I've been pissing and moaning for a long time, and finally my team, you know, my front office is acting like a front office of the biggest market in the country. In the last, couple weeks, Kelly Johnson, Juan Uribe, Tyler Clippard, and then, of course, the big catch, courtesy of Lake Michigan, and that was Yionis Cespedes.
I believe it's pronounced Jose.
Jose Cespedes. Sounds like a jobber.
Yeah, it does. Oh.
The following contest, scheduled for one fall. From the Bronx, New York, weighing 225 pounds, Jose Cespedes. That was my think.
That's so great. I love that idea.
Gotta admit, they did moves that fit everything they needed. Another reliever, pop in the lineup, obviously. I could see them going after maybe one more reliever this month. But boy, they rattled the cage of the Nationals, and suddenly I think what it comes down to, Joel, is the Mets are playing like believers now. Now they finally, I think there was the whole franchise, the fan base, all waiting for just no shoe to drop, and then we just kind of fade into oblivion like we do every year. And I think all of a sudden everyone's like, holy shit, they actually did something. And this weekend at Citi Field, they've shown the Nationals that they're not going to be the pushovers that they've been the last 6 years.
And the Nationals had a chance to step on their throat a few weeks ago.
A few times, yes.
They didn't do it. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, their top three, I'm looking at their wins above replacement. Three of their top five are the pitchers, DeGrom, Harvey, and Syndergaard, 1, 2, and 5.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, DeGrom, he's got 4.2 wins above replacement. The next guy, Harvey, has 2.9. That is a great pitching staff, and I think that it helps a lot when teams use this as a cliche. You know, they talk about, well, when so-and-so pitches, we know we're going to win, you know. And I think for the first time since maybe – I mean, you guys can speak to this more than I can, but it's like the first time since really, you know, the mid-'80s Mets had that, you know, Doc Gooden, Sid Fernandez, you know, that
Bob Ojeda.
That mid-80s, 85, 86 rotation. It feels to me like, you know, and with Steven Matz, I mean, it feels like you could say 4 out of 5 days you feel like you're going to win. And, you know, the fifth day with Cologne and Nice, you got a shot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. I think this is a team on the upswing if they can stay healthy. I mean, you know, I worry about Travis d'Arnaud getting hurt more.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I think Conforto probably needs more time in the minors. He had a great debut and hasn't done anything since.
He's filling roster holes. They had to bring him up again today. Yeah. It's Neuenheis went on the DL. So
yeah.
He's...
I mean, and really it's a shame that you got to treat a top prospect as filler. I hope they stop doing that because the kid looks like he can hit.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they try to pick up a bat for the outfield, you know, a jack of all trades kind of guy. I like the talent here. I mean, I there's still some holes with the defense. And, you know, obviously Eric Campbell is not an answer at third base. No. But if Wright comes back and hits, you know, reasonably well, you know, even if he's a shadow of his former self, he'll still be an upgrade. And, you know, Uribe's not bad. He can pick it. Johnson, yeah, he's okay. He can play all around. He's kind of a poor man Zobrist. And you know, you're going to love Cespedes. I mean, you're just, you know, I mean, his 4 months in Detroit, I mean, I can't tell you how many jerseys I saw going to games or just watching him on TV. I mean, people just love the guy. He's not a talker, you know, but he's got a playing charisma that just gravitates people to him. And he's not an on-base guy, but he's got power. He's got amazing power, like light laser beam power. And he's a good defender. He really electrifies a crowd. And I think it was a great deal for both sides. You know, the Tigers got a good prospect in Fulmer, and the Mets got, I think, exactly what they needed with that, such a dynamic, bat and a dynamic presence too.
Right.
Because the rest of your lineup is pretty nondescript. I mean,
it's a good adjective. They are.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the most charismatic player in your lineup after Cespedes is Wilmer Flores.
Yes.
And that's only because he started crying 2 days ago. I mean, before that, nobody outside of Mets fandom knew his name, you know. And then it's like, oh, look, he cried because he was getting traded. And then he hit that walk-off, and now he's like he's a name now. But, you know, that's a huge leap.
And I think Cespedes adds some protection for Lucas Duda, who's a good hitter. I think, you know.
Another home run tonight, by the way.
He goes into his slumps, but I think that maybe he'll limit those slumps a little bit with Cespedes in front of him. And, you have to love this Mets pitching staff. I mean, that's what's keeping him in this all year long.
Yeah.
The thing the Mets, you got to worry always about the Mets is, like, you know, they can go here and maybe sweep Washington and then go play someone else that they should beat and lose 2 of 3 or, you know, 3 in a row and – you know, and then the fans start panicking again, and then the team starts, you know. Although I think the makeup of this team is a little bit better, but, you know, you just hope that the team doesn't, you know, fall into that rut. But if they can keep playing ball like they're playing lately, they could give Washington a run for their money. Washington's had a lot of injuries, and they've had chances to step on the Mets' throat, and they didn't do it this year. So Scott's got to be excited.
I'm incredibly excited. Take the city. Da-da-da-da-da-da. You belong to the city. Remember that? Remember we played that? You belong to... No? Okay, never mind. In the Central, the Cardinals keep cruising. However, Joel, Matt Holliday's gone for the year. Apparently, they're very upset. They wanted Cespedes, and the Cardinals did not attempt to get him.
I think getting Cespedes is, you know, for the Cardinals, it would have been a panic move, and that's not their style.
No, it's not their style.
You know, so I think they'll be okay. I mean, you know, I was kind of surprised they didn't try to make something better happen. I mean, all they really did was, I mean, they picked up Brandon Moss, who, you know, got the game-winning single today. Surprise, surprise. You know, and they got a couple good arms for their bullpen. I mean, Shishik is fine, and Broxton is, you know, depth. They didn't really give up a lot to get those two guys. I guess the guy that gave up to get Moss is got a pretty good ceiling on him. So that kind of, you know, ruffled their feathers a bit. But, you know, but I mean, it's the Cardinals. You know what's going to happen. Moss is going to put on their jersey and turn into Stan Musial for 2 months. So it's
fine. Ugh. You know. Rap bastards.
And Scott loves it.
I can hear it in his voice. It's so thick and rich, I could drizzle it over pancakes.
Pirates are still hanging around, and how about the Cubbies? They've won 5 straight.
Yeah, they're hanging in there. I still think next year is going to be a better year for them. I still think they've got some growing pains on that team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's one reason they didn't really go out and get any big names. I mean, all they did was, you know, they got Dan Heron, who, you know, he's not a difference maker. He's just depth, you know. Tommy Hunter is a nice arm in the bullpen, but yeah, other than that, they really didn't do a whole lot, because I think they know that, you know, it's better to just, you know, just hang on to what they've got, and, you know, maybe add a free agent or two in the fall and then see where they're at. But, you know, I think they played it smart. The one thing I'm surprised they didn't do is I'm surprised they didn't dump Starlin Castro, but they probably couldn't find anybody to take him, to be honest. So,
but, yeah. I know the Mets were talking about getting him a couple months ago, and some discussions kind of fell by the wayside.
Yeah, well, good for you guys.
Yeah. and in the West, the Dodgers – I think made some incredible moves. I mean, top to bottom, their rotation is pretty playoff ready.
Yeah, that was an amazingly bizarre, weird, crazy smart deal they made. I mean, if you remember, Hector Olivera came over from Cuba, and it came down to, like, the Mets were kind of in on him, and the Padres were kind of in on him, mm-hmm. and a couple other teams. But it really came down to the Dodgers and the Braves. Those were the finalists. And so I think the Dodgers kind of used that. They basically – what they did is they used Olivera. They basically bought him, and they just said, you know, well, if you want him so bad, fine, but, you know, just give us, you know, everything else. I mean, you know, they got Matt Latos from the Marlins, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's face it, the Marlins suck.
Yep.
I give Stanton 1 year before he's begging to get out of there.
Yeah, well, he's screwed because he ain't going anywhere.
That's right.
No one's taking a penny of that disaster that they did.
No.
Well, not for him. Well, he's living in, I mean, let's, you know, I mean, that's another discussion for another day about, yeah. Do you really give a damn whether you win with the Marlins or not, because you're about to make more money than Jesus.
That's right.
You know, but
I could see the Dodgers being the only team on the planet that would do it.
Yeah.
That's about it. But, you know, they got Latos. They got Alex Wood, who is a young, good, left-handed pitcher. So now their rotation is just, I mean, it's, they went from Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke and not a whole lot of depth to, you know, suddenly a pretty deep rotation. They've got Kershaw, Greinke, Anderson, Bolsinger. you know, and then they just added wood and Latos. I mean, that's a really good, deep pitching staff. I mean, you go into October with Kershaw, Greinke, Latos, and Wood, I really like your odds.
Mm-hmm. You know? I do too.
And John Hart, I think I'm just going to start calling John Hart General Sherman because he has just burned Atlanta to the ground. Just totally.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got a plan in there somewhere, but, you know, I know my friends in Georgia are pretty downtrodden at the moment because they just have no reason to watch this team.
I know. And it's not often that a team's like that.
No, but kudos,
the like that.
Kudos to the Dodgers for totally fleecing, you know, the short bussers in Atlanta and Florida. Kudos.
Sure.
But the Giants didn't sit on their hands. They got Leak to add to the rotation.
Right.
You never count that team out.
Nope.
No, you just
if there is a manager that you do not want to forget about as the season progresses, it is Bruce Bochy.
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, they. I mean, I know Sabian, you know, kind of stepped out of the GM chair. I'm sure he's still got, you know, his fingers in the pot somewhere. But now they haven't missed a beat. I mean, this team is just, you know, the infield of Posey, Belt, Panic, Crawford, and Duffy is probably the best infield in baseball. You know, and the outfield. I mean, it's. The outfield is basically just duct tape. It's just, you know, throw a guy here, throw a guy there. But they're making it work because their infield is so good. And their pitching is, you know, it's good enough, you know. And, again, I'm looking at their stats and, you know, there's nobody outstanding in the rotation. Bumgarner's fine. Heston's been all right. But then the bullpen, you've got, you know, Casilla is good. Contos has been good. Lopez, I mean, he's a loogie, but he's been good. I mean, yeah, they're just – I think the key to their success is that tremendous infield, both offensively and defensively, and Bochy. He knows what buttons to push and when to push them. And, you know, I got to think he's a Hall of Fame candidate, I think. I mean, he's only 25 games over 500, but that's mostly due to the garbage he was being fed in San Diego. He's a great manager, and, you know, he's the MVP of that team.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, but yeah, that's a team you just can't discount, you know.
Yeah. One last question before we go. The one more team to talk about, the Padres. You know, everyone thought they were going to trade the world. I mean, if I had to pick a guy that I thought the Mets were going to get, it was not going to be Cespedes. I knew for sure. I thought for sure it would be Justin Upton. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. A lot of guys. Kimbrel obviously was supposed to be playing for the Doctors team. Apparently, that's not happening. Your thoughts on the Padres kind of sitting still for the most part, and not engaging as many people, as many teams as everyone thought.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm going to quote one of my heroes, AA Arn Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to toot my own horn, but
toot.
This team sucks, and it's because of everything we talked about in March. They're too right-handed heavy. The defense has been awful. Matt Kemp is just on a roller coaster to nowhere. And, you know, a lot of people gave A.J. Preller credit for being aggressive, but there's a fine line between being aggressive and having a plan. And I don't think he really had a plan just so much as he was like, I'm going to make as many waves as I can and hope that it all works out. It kind of reminds me of there's a Simpsons episode where Homer goes to college. Maybe you guys have seen it. I don't know. But he's getting ready for his final exam, and he says, I have a plan. I'm going to go in and hide under a big pile of coats and hope that everything works out.
Hmm.
And I feel like that's what AJ Preller kind of did in March, you know, at the beginning of the season. He just said, I'm just going to get all these big names. I'm not going to worry about how they fit and play to the strengths of my ballpark or the strengths of my ball club. I'm just going to hope everything works out. Nothing did work out. And, you know, and then he had a chance to sell some of these pieces off and try to recoup some of his losses. But, you know, I don't know if it was – I don't know if his demands were outrageous. There was a rumor that he asked for Goldschmidt for Kimbrel, which, you know, maybe it was legit. Maybe it was, you know, more of a, you know, facetious remark. I you know, I'm not, you know, in on those things, but I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know why he couldn't move, you know, at least, you know, a pitcher like Cashner or Ross or yeah, Kimbrel. I mean, it seems like there's been a decent market for him, and it sounded like there was. And why he couldn't move Upton, that's the one piece that just baffles me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other guys I can see, you know, maybe Cashner, okay, you get scared off by his health. Shields, you get scared off by his contract. Ross, you get scared off by his secondary numbers. Kimbrel, you get scared off because he's a closer, and who cares? You can make them, you know, out of just about anybody. But why they couldn't move Upton, a potential free agent who's actually producing in San Diego, is just beyond me. And, you know, we talked about managers that are on the hot seat. I got to think Preller's on the hot seat too.
Hmm.
I mean, there was so much turnover for the Padres. I mean, they fired their manager, and you know, when you fire your manager and that doesn't work, who's next? So,
right.
It'll be interesting, but I think AJ may have missed his chance to save his job.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep tabs on them and the other teams around the league as the month of August moves along. Joel, thank you as always.
Of course.
We'll have you back on. I'll have you back on around Labor Day as we hit the true stretch of September and when things really get juicy. Dr. G.
Well, you know, our two teams play in September this year, and there could be some ramifications from that series, which normally in the past, they're really, you know, those are just regular games on the schedule. So.
But we've never played this late. That's the crazy.
That's what I'm saying. That's
yeah, it's wow.
And the Mets are tied right now as of this show, when at the end
yep.
of the show.
Yep, they beat the Nationals tonight 5-2. Three homers in the third inning, and then the God of Thunder dropped the hammer, and he continues to be quite dominating. To look at our two teams' schedules, because, you know, nobody really cares what the Tigers are doing anymore.
No.
did I not whisper that low enough?
I don't think so. By the way, real quick, we talked about this, I think, before we started recording. Before the Cespedes trade, the last, you know, thing the Tigers and the Mets did was back in 2005, they made a couple of minor trades. So these are not, you know, these are not trading partners that get mm-hmm. together very often, and when they do, they tend not to rock the boat.
Right. So. Here is the Yankees' August. Off day tomorrow. Then a six-game homestand against the Red Sox and Blue Jays, Mr. Doctor. So, ooh, big homestand coming up.
Yes.
And then on the road for 6-3 in Cleveland, which you should mop the floor with them. And then you go to the Rogers Center, and that's almost as big a series as playing them. So the next two weekends, my friend, you got some work to do.
That's what I'm saying. It can change no matter a week and a half.
And then a 10-game homestand, 3 with the Twins, 4 with the Indians, and 3 with the Astros.
Ooh, interesting.
And then you end the month 3 in Atlanta, and then the last day of August you start a series at Fenway, and that goes into September. Not an easy month, my friend.
Nope.
But that's what they call them, the dog days.
That's right.
The day lay dog. As for the team on the other side of town, they're making a little bit of noise. I don't know if you noticed. Just a little bit of noise. Do you hear it? Do you hear it? You do hear it, don't you?
Yeah. Keep going.
I know you hear it. You hear it. Or is that just the storm at Joel's house? I don't know.
It's probably the storm, I'm guessing.
The Mets' August looks like this. Well, they just won tonight. They start a Florida road trip, 3 in Miami with the Marlins, and these games always scare the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah, always.
The Marlins are in their heads. It's crazy. Then an off day Thursday, and then 3 with the Rays. A little interleague action this month. 3 with the Rays. Then a 7-game homestand, 4 with Colorado, and 3 with Pittsburgh, which is actually a pretty big series. Because of the Mets need to at least be around everybody. So not only do they have to make sure that they stay within the division, but they need to start creeping up on the Pirates and Cubs in this wild card situation. So that series in 2 weeks, not this coming weekend, the weekend after with the Pirates is big. Then a road trip, 2 in Baltimore, 3 in Colorado, and 4 in Philadelphia. They just got to kick the Phillies in the teeth for 4 straight games and just put them to bed. And then the Red Sox come in last weekend of August, the weekend you play the Braves. So you play the team I hate the most, and I play the team you hate the most at the same weekend. So that is the Mets month of August. So, Joel, again, thank you. We'll have you back on about Labor Day. We'll get through the month of August, see how things look, and then go from there. Dr. G, we'll try and get back in a couple weeks. I know that we're supposed to have our big debate with our good friends down this hall in that little tiny shack known as the Sports Lounge. We have to not report, but we will be putting that together very soon. So keep that on your radar. So for the doctor and for Joel, I am Scott. The San Jose Sabercats kicked a couple extra points on Friday night against the Arizona Rattlers. But then extra points are coming soon because we are in training camp. But right now it's more like home runs, strikeouts, no steroids. Have a good 2 weeks.